All right. So we hope that you're well fed and you've had a good break. And we have a new crystal to talk about. This one. Interesting how those who polished it perceived the, even though it was not a cathedral crystal, it was, in a sense, polished to give almost a cathedral window shape, you know? A kind of a point, giving it an ecclesiastical orientation, right? Giving it kind of that type of a energy. And what it does tend to do, and the reason for windows being like that and for arches being like that in churches is because the point refers to the third eye, the energy coming to the point of the third eye, which transcends consciousness and transcends the body. And so that's why you see it in churches and why they have steeples and they have spires. It all has to do with getting into the third eye and heading on out, you know, and going into the inner realm. So it's interesting that they did this because it is what we would call a power crystal. It has got a tremendous amount of, as you can see, there's still, they left, which delightfully so, they left some of the original earthy, you know, incrustations on it to give it a kind of a backdrop. So it has a lot of earth energy. It has a lot of groundedness. It has a lot of centeredness. It is a place of taking power and authority and a place to rest, to be nurtured by the earth, to be received by the earth, and to make your choices, to evaluate and make choices. It's really, in a sense, very helpful for that process. And it's got a lot of creative access, a lot of opportunities and options and little portals and inclusions and striations and all sorts of wonderful things just scattered all over the place. Even some rutils here and there. So it has a kind of a smorgasbord of things which refer to the evaluation of possibility before you make a choice, before you make your selection. So it helps you in looking at the widest range of possibility, which always helps you come to the most precise choice. So it is a wonderful crystal for that, and it is it can hold and reflect a tremendous amount of strength and integrity, and it has indeed also warmth. It is a Earth is very, can be very nurturing, very supportive. So it has all that good quality in there. Very, very beautiful with the rainbows and so forth. So that's what we'll be holding this afternoon. All right. So between the downloads of yesterday and the attunement that happened weaving in and out of this meditation you had earlier today, you have begun a construct in the consensus. It is as if you are, you know, when you are putting a new face on a building or you're doing new construction, you have a scaffolding, and the scaffolding enables you to get up into it, and sometimes it enables access. In a sense, you have scaffolding on your structure right now. You've like changing the face of it, changing the orientation of it. You haven't released and cleared the consensus reality. And indeed, there is also a need for you to recognize that it is important for you to stop judging the consensus reality. There's a tendency to say, well, this is the better way. This is the way I want to go. I'm on a spiritual path and I'm going to leave the consensus. I'm going to go beyond the consensus. I'm going to stretch into the new territories. And when you do that kind of thing, it is beautiful and invigorating and creates enthusiasm and excitement for the adventure. But then you fall prey to the consensus reality construct of separation. So that if you're going to go that way, it's an either or. You're going that way and the consensus is over this way. And so this is the good choice and that's the bad choice. And this is, oh, you feel sorry for the people stuck in the consensus as you go flying merrily by. The problem is that you still have to live in the consensus. You're not out of the consensus, you know. In fact, what you're wanting to do in the process of your spiritual journey and exploring the unity and the oneness within yourself and the connectedness of all things is that you are actually making shifts and changes and additions into the collective. You are expanding the collective. You're expanding the possibilities for everyone. You will continue to live in the collective for a while longer. Because indeed, if you were to really leave the consensus reality at this time, it would be too soon. You wouldn't know how to function completely outside of the consensus. And what would the consensus do with you? It's like you're insane. You'd be thrown in a mental institution. You know, that's like, some people say, you know, if Jesus was here today, he'd be on Prozac. Right? He'd be locked up on Prozac. So it's, the thing is that you would just, your ego could not function. You could not relate. You could not interface. You could not get things. You couldn't survive. You couldn't receive through the consensus. Right now, all the money you have comes basically through the consensus. There will come a time in the future where you may just be walking around and money will show up. But, and of course you'd love for that to be true now, but it's not time yet for you. You haven't learned how to work with time and how to work outside the consensus. But you will get there sooner if you will stop judging the poor thing. You know, the consensus is kind of a collective conglomerate and a kind of an assortment that has been shuffled through and oriented in a particular way of all the things that are thought and felt and done and blah, blah, blah. So it's like, you got to have some impact on it first, and then it starts to become much more fun. And then you don't feel bad about the consensus at all. In fact, you revel in it. You enjoy it. It's an adventure for you. It's like in the meditation, you go into the city of the future. And some of you got detail and some of you didn't. You know, the thing is that if you were outside the consensus at that timing, you could have, you know, seen a completely different reality than what you would imagine as an extension of what you have now into the future. So it's there's a lot of time play. Now we're going to do some of it throughout this workshop. It would just be a lot of fun to really just focus on time and to play with it a lot, to bend it, twist it, jump on it, fly through it, you know, just play with time. The more that you do play with time, the more that you do get out of linear consciousness and all that separation energy and all the judgments and all the duality, you'll find that your ability to manifest miraculous things or to draw them to you will increase. Miracles don't happen in 3D. 3D right now is governed and ruled by the lords of logic. It's like society has said, this is the way it's supposed to be. And even in some of the third world countries, which have until very recently not really subscribed to the scientific linear model, or they were destroyed by the religious model. You know, the missionaries going in there and saying, no, you are not allowed to do your ancient rituals. You're not allowed to follow your traditions. And so religion destroys time as well. And so there's a lot of cultures are feeling shame because they are not accepted as the way they are. It's part of that domination, manipulation, and violence, and the pecking order. And the cultures that are most capable of time jumping are right now at the bottom of the heap. They're the lowest in the pecking order. They're the most ignorant savages, the most stupid people. Oh, you're just superstitious, stupid people, you know. So recognize that you as individuals are going to crystallize some things, and you're going to be able to move back into the capacity to flow and move with time. And because you've made it through the individuality matrix, you are also going to be free of the limitations of those ancient rituals. So while a lot of ancient shamanic practice and traditional wisdoms of the Mayans, Incans, and so forth can be very appealing, some of their initiation processes, some of their ceremonies become extremely limiting because they reflect cultural values of a tribal society, and your society has gone beyond tribal energy at this point. So you've actually deliberately done this on a spiritual journey in order to free yourself. So when you use, say, pieces of shamanic tradition, which some of which we will be using tomorrow, actually, we suggest that you don't allow yourself to get into the cultural traditions, but utilize the energetic powers that are gifted to you from these traditions. Because there's tremendous powers that transcend third dimension, go through fourth and fifth dimension. And there's a lot of aging reversal, a lot of longevity available through using some of those strategies and techniques working with the forces and the elements. All right, so here you are. You've started changing the templates, started changing your perception of the consensus. Now we want to talk about the most common aging patterns as they are manifest on your body. Now, the aging patterns that manifest most strongly on people's bodies that are generally the first markers that say, hello, this person is aging, belong to a kind of generalized group of symptoms gathered together that have kind of emerged to be called Syndrome X. And it is assumed that if you live long enough, you'll probably have Syndrome X yourself. Syndrome X is marked by endocrine reduction. In other words, your hormones are low, particularly thyroid. Blood sugar is out of balance. You'll probably have, if you are hypoglycemic or low blood sugar, you'll probably switch over into diabetes or high blood sugar. And so diabetes is the marker of how far you've gone in Syndrome X. Heart disease and arterial plaques and arteriosclerosis, hardening of the arteries, high blood pressure. And, of course, the thing that people become aware of first is generally what they call the spare tire or middle age spread, right? And then there's those reading glasses, yes? All of this is, hint, you're on the track to Syndrome X, right? Now you may say, well, wait a minute, I have low sugar. But the theory of Syndrome X is that eventually that low blood sugar will create what is known as insulin resistance. Your pancreas will get exhausted and then problems will happen and all of a sudden you'll be switched over into diabetes. Your circulatory system shuts down. Your lymph system shuts down and so your body gains weight and puffs up. What initially is called water weight becomes a permanent kind of thing. Your system is acid, even if your digestion is alkaline, or if your digestion has not enough acid in it. You will tend to be acid in your body. In your blood will aim towards acid. The fat cells swell up to surround and protect you from acid, particles of acid, which is the incomplete metabolic breakdown of bad foods or foods that cannot be digested adequately. Your digestive system in Syndrome X doesn't work as well. You get more gas and bloating and problems with your bowels and all sorts of unpleasant things. Like diverticulitis, you know, inflammation, osteoporosis, arthritis, also part of Syndrome X. In fact, the big killers, the ones that in the statistics, the heart disease, diabetes, you know, and cancer. Those are all kind of end results of Syndrome X. So it's part of the consensus reality perception that as you age, you'll probably pick up Syndrome X and you'll put weight. If you put weight up high, you're an apple, right? And if you put it low, you're a quote unquote pear. And that's more beneficial to be a pear. It's easier to be a pear than an apple because an apple is more ill and blah, 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 and all that kind of stuff. All right? But ultimately, it leads to heart disease, diabetes, and if you make it past those, you get cancer anyway. Right? It just goes on and on and on. It's amazing how long people can live despite all the bad news that is continuously thrown at them out there. All the beliefs about aging that are there. Now, there are several reasons, if you want to look at reasons. Now, we don't really want to get you totally locked up into cause and effect. But one of the things we do want to point out is that belief systems will definitely attract and draw Syndrome X to you, if you let them. And it is something we would suggest very consciously and deliberately on your part for you to look at those triggers, those, and the energies and the emotional and mental orientations that when twisted or put out of balance will show up in the body as various components of Syndrome X. All right, first of all, overweight. What is overweight? From the emotional side, overweight is reflecting in your body that you have certain key emotional situations and issues and foci that you're working on. All right, one has to do with visibility. How willing are you to be seen? You see, when a person has weight, what does another person see? Do they look into their eyes to examine their soul? No. They say, oh gosh, an overweight person. Or something worse, Yvonne. And sadly, this can also be said and done by another overweight person. There's not a lot of love and a lot of give for people with weight. So anytime you have a little bit of overweight, by the time it's about 15 or 20 pounds overweight, you're already worrying on trying to get it off, right? One way or another, got to get that weight off. And of course you're focusing on a symptom showing up in your body. And maybe not necessarily on what the issue is you're really working on. The body is just saying, hey, look, I'm mirroring to you something. Here, hello. Get the message. Work with it. So visibility is one. And, it doesn't have to be weight. There are a lot of, like, young people who like to be very wild dressers. You know, they put tremendous costumes on and they color their hair wild, crazy colors and put all sorts of this and that. And you can see young people with rings here and rings there and stuff stuck in this place and that place. And so on. Does anyone see what's going on in them? Does anyone really see them? No. They hide. they hide effectively because everybody sees the costume. All right? Sometimes when you get older, you don't think you can do that anymore. If you did, you might be able to avoid a few extra pounds. If you feel socially awkward, if you feel shy, if you feel vulnerable, if you feel that you are easily hurt, it's very easy for you to put weight on so that you can become more invisible. That who you really are, the light being that you really are, is a little harder to see. A second foci that you might be working on is specifically the loss of some love, some joy, some beauty, some success, a loss of some sort, and a mourning over that loss. That loss creating a disappointment or a disillusionment of some sort, or even a hollowness or emptiness in your life. A loss that cannot be filled, that once done is done. And there can be sorrow with it, a sadness, a sense of guilt, perhaps even, about that loss. And that can show up as weight as well. Very often, there are a lot of people who are kind of skinny through their childhood and skinny, and they have a really intense and incredible, rocky, romantic relationship, and then there's a big breakup. And within a year and a half, they've gained 30, 40 pounds. If a person feels chronically kind of lonely and craves to have a relationship but is afraid they can't make it work or that it's not going to work, it comes out of that kind of an experience. Oh, I've made too many mistakes in my relationships in the past. This is a protection. This is a buffer. So I won't get hurt anymore. And a lot of times that loss came with so much emotional pain that the fat is actually a buffer physically to pain. So it's used as a buffer for emotional pain as well. The body can't really tell the difference. If you're hurting emotionally, the body will interpret that as strong as physical pain. And very often, if you're hurting emotionally, you will feel physical pain. You'll feel pain in your chest, or you'll feel pain in your solar plexus, or pain in your neck, or whatever. Wherever you'll feel your pain, and the body will take steps to buffer it, to calm it down. Another focus that comes with overweight has to do with issues of scarcity. And this is in the collective, in the unconscious, in the cultures. And in the many cultures, overweight is seen as a sign of prosperity. You have overweight, it means you can eat whenever you want to, which means all the time. Right? You can eat and eat and eat and eat and eat. Right? And this is different from those poor people who starve and have to eat one meal every other day. Now, fortunately, you're not in a culture in which that happens, where the majority, you know, are half starving all the time and are all scrawny and underweight and having to work hard and not make enough money to really make it well and so forth and so on. So the status of overweight is not really seen in your culture. But a lot of times you will find that it just comes along, you know, as you get a little bit more settled and more money and so forth and so on, and you get some nice things and you have a nice house and you settle into the house, it just kind of comes along with it. You have really good food and you have, like, you know, good parties and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It just is like the abundance of the good life. Now you may think, well, wait a minute, that sounds like weight is a positive. It's just a reflection of the abundance of the good life. Well, we would say that a lot of times this quote-unquote good life is really the form trying to imitate the connections with people, the intimacies with people. And so sometimes they're a person who has lots and lots of parties, really would love to be intimate and close to people, but can't do it. And also, that collective unconscious of, okay, now you've got the big house, you've got the status, you know, weight comes with it. It's like, where did that come from? It comes from your genes. It comes from generations ago being passed down, saying, well, that's indicative that they've made it. They have enough money now. And there may be also individual reasons for weight. Now, as we said earlier, that fat cells will swell to surround acid. When you eat foods that are acid-producing and you don't have enough of the right enzymes and the right chemistry to digest it, you get incomplete byproducts. Foods that create the highest degree of acid byproducts are generally meats and proteins. Right? So when there's acid byproducts, it burns the digestive tract. Well, yes, it's good to have acid in the stomach. And also the intestines and colon also need to be a bit more acid, but not that much. Filled with undigested debris. So the body pulls that out of the intestines and puts it into fat because it is seen as a toxin. And it is. It's a toxin. It can poison you. The body knows it's got to keep a certain acid-alkaline balance so that you survive. It's a balance thing, okay? So now, what causes that protein metabolic breakdown that creates so much acid that the fat cells have to swell up and surround it? It's not like you have more fat cells when you have more pounds. It's your fat cells swelling up and buffering the acid. The acid comes from emotional energies of anger, resentment, bitterness, revenge, and rage. Those are acid energies. If they're not expressed, if they're not released, if you hold on to them. Because if you hold on to them, the body has to stuff it somewhere. When it goes into your digestive system, it creates problems. All right. Now, if you have fear, fear very often goes into the nervous system. And what the fear tends to do is make you want to, you know, run. You know, fight or flight mechanism. There are several mechanisms, actually. They've talked about the three Fs that humans do. We would say that there are actually four. Three of which are responses to alarm. The one to alarm that scientists usually acknowledge is the fight or flight. But they don't acknowledge a third one, which is freeze. Have you noticed that in nature, like little deer can stay motionless for hours? And it has been observed that if they stay motionless for hours, this has been observed even in Africa, that a lion who would normally eat such a deer can go up to it and sniff it. And if it does not move, will walk on. Why? Because the instinct of hunting is triggered by all the chase. So freeze is a very, very good defensive mechanism. People with fear can either run their metabolisms extra fast, that's running, or they can shut down, freeze. All right? When they shut down, they can get all sorts of strange and very bizarre chemistry. The body doesn't know how to deal with this. It will generally shut down the endocrine system. If it's a flight, if it's run, 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 the nervous system gets hyper and people lose weight and they can't gain it. And so people come and say, I'm underweight, I need to gain weight. And of course everybody else says, oh, you're lucky, you're so lucky. No, it's difficult to be underweight. It's not healthy. When you're underweight and don't have enough fat in your body, you cannot produce hormones. Hormones are produced by cholesterol. All right. So people who are actually overweight are people who have high cholesterol, okay, are people who have a capacity for a great amount of passion. But what are they doing? They're containing it. They're stuffing it. They're hiding it. Which leads us to another aspect of overweight. It's denial of passion. Instead of that cholesterol going and doing good hormonal activity, it just gets stashed away. Because hormones are fed a lot by the proteins and the fat. You know, you can eat meat and really build your hormones if you digest it properly and if your emotions are moving okay. And that's just one cursory look at weight. The body also complains and puts on some weight if you don't give it enough exercise. This is a breakdown or a slowdown of the lymphatic system. The body is too inert. The body sits too long all day. The body doesn't exercise enough, doesn't move around enough. Now, also with that, though, corresponding to the body, the motivation to sit around all day is in alignment with the emotional body in the sense that the emotional body has lots of different emotions, and by golly, you really don't want to feel them, you don't want to release them, you want to ignore them, put them away, don't deal with it. Okay, I'm not feeling any problems, okay? I'm not feeling any emotions. They're stashed in your lymphatic system, your water system of the body. And generally, this is the beginning of the water weight. This is the beginning of the spare tire syndrome. Because if the lymph doesn't work properly, then it cannot drain into the digestive system properly. And what it comes in is too concentrated a toxin. It's not flushed well. And if it's a toxin, then it has to go to your liver to be processed. And from the liver, it goes into the bile, and then you get more acid because the bile goes out there and helps digest, but then it's reabsorbed. So you reabsorb the toxins back into the liver, put the bile out there again with more toxins added, bring it back in. Over time, the liver gets overloaded. The liver, again, is all of these acid-producing emotions, anger, rage, resentment, revenge, frustrations, and stresses that have anger in them, a sense of powerlessness or a sense of hopelessness and frustration. These are pieces of debris that are from your past, if you have those. And if you have any of those, they do need to be released. They need to be honored and recognized, respected, listen to, and thanked. Thank you, anger, for telling me all about the school teacher who spit on me when I was in fifth grade. Thank you. All right, now I can let go of that fear of being persecuted and intimidated by authority. All right, great. And you don't even have to know the incident. You can just feel it. Feeling the powerlessness. Okay, well, I've had to kowtow to somebody too long. The emotional body is so easy at first to ignore. But later on, it will shout at you. Later on, it will get you. It will make you ill. It will distort your body. All right. Another thing that has to do with weight, and we mentioned toxicity, has to do with allergies and toxicity. Again, these are the anger-related or the acid emotions. Allergies are angers associated, angers and fears and heavy-duty emotions associated with something. It can come with a judgment. So you see, judgments can really stick you. If you get an emotional judgment and you have a cause and effect, well, you know, I cannot eat that food because it does this to me and I'm really, you know, I really resent this, but I'm going to have to deny myself this food and I judge it, you know, and I judge this. It's a bad food. Nobody should be eating this. If I can't eat it, nobody should eat it, right? You have a whole bunch of angry vegans, you know? If I cannot justify eating meat, but if I can't eat meat, then nobody should eat meat. Then everybody will be nice. Yeah, right. Oh, all vegans are very gentle, laid-back, nice people, right? Acid will go one way or the other. Acid emotions, if you don't put it into weight, it can go into and destroy your digestive system, which creates more allergies and more food deprivation, which creates a round of more anger and resentment. So the emotional body can really do a whammy on the physical body. Meanwhile, you're not feeling any bad emotions. I'm feeling fine. Oh, I just happen to have, you know, 30 extra pounds, or my digestion doesn't work, or whatever. I have food allergies up the wazoo. I'm toxic up, you know, to the max. My liver doesn't function quite right. But I feel fine. I'm a happy camper, you know. Otherwise, you know, not. There's emotions under there that need to be brought up from the past. And the older that they are, the more they get embedded in time. And anytime anything gets embedded in time, it means they go and affect the hormones. The hormones are your timers of your body. We're going to talk more about that tomorrow. If you don't have passion and zest for life, your hormones are going to drop. And generally, you're going to think, well, oh, my hormones have gotten so low because, you know, I'm in menopause, or I'm over 40, or I'm whatever, my testosterone is down, or my estrogen is low, or whatever it is. And that's why I don't really feel motivated, and that's why I don't really feel passionately enthusiastic about, you know, it's so-so because my hormones are low. No, what came first? Somewhere you gave up on yourself. Somewhere you gave up your passion. All right, heart disease. Plaque in the arteries. Love and passion restrained, denied, unable to follow through and complete, a blockage of giving and receiving. And as we mentioned yesterday, sometimes after people have heart attacks, they're much nicer because they got rid of a lot of that rage and anger about not being loved, and and a sense of that I cannot receive love and that I cannot give love. And then they warm up. Sometimes people go to death's door, even have a near-death experience. And then their lives change and they get in connection with who they are. And the body knows this. So it can make you really, really ill, saying, okay, you didn't get that. Okay, we'll get some more. We'll give you some more illness. Yeah? Okay, did you get that one? Okay, you ready to feel now? You may wonder, is there infinite emotional debris to get rid of? To a certain extent, there is. Because every step of spiritual and personal development and growth that you make, you expand your energy. You expand your concept of who you are. You expand into your very own subconscious unconscious. You're expanding your conscious awareness into subconscious and unconscious territory. That is territory you previously were not conscious of. You're going to a place where you're going to be fully conscious of your unconscious. Whereas now, you only know just a little teeny tiny piece of it, maybe. You can go in meditation into your unconscious and play there briefly and come back out. But there's coming a time where it becomes, and some of you are already experiencing this, it's becoming much more comfortable to be connected with your unconscious, to feel safe there, to know what happens there. Every time you expand, you uncover a new shitload of stuff you stashed away in there. You're a subconscious and unconscious is loaded. Right? Now, it has wonderful things, too. You have no idea of the scope of it. Scope is phenomenal, just amazing. But when you're expanding back into consciousness and opening up to consciousness, moving into more super consciousness, the body knows, and your emotional body, your mental body, your unconscious, subconscious, they know that you need to clear this out so that you can establish your mastery to that level that you have come to. And what stands in the way of your mastery of consciousness? It's emotional debris. Times when, back in the past, where you made a choice, let's say, that you were tired of being angry and you were always getting in trouble for being angry because you were being mistreated and you were talking back and you were resisting and rebelling and fighting those who were beating you up and mistreating you. Finally, you succumbed. You surrendered. You gave in. Where did that surrender? Where did all that emotion go? Somewhere in your subconscious and unconscious, that when you're like, and that was when you were like 8 or 9 years of age. And here you are like 45 or even 65 or older. And you uncover this whole mother load of stuff that came from 8 or 9 years of age. You would say, scratch your head in total bewilderment. How come I'm still processing that crap? How many times have you had to go over that? Well, you put it on lots of different levels. Like when you grow on a spiral. So when you stash on a spiral. So when you unwind to release gunk you've stashed in yourself, it releases on a spiral. So you release it, and then it goes around the spiral, and you grow. And you come to a new place and bang, you hit the same place on the spiral and there it is again. Because you've gone into new territory where it was stashed. You see, if you don't judge that, you use it. And you can, in a sense, not sabotage yourself with it. Because if you judge it, then every time it shows up, you assume you haven't made any progress. Right? You go, oh no, I'm still there? No, you're not. You came up to another level. if you would just realize you only really have to process it once. When it comes up again, you acknowledge, hey, I'm on a higher level of this, and I love myself enough, I'm just going to let it go. You're conscious. You, by choice, let it go. You don't have to keep processing it. Now you may get a new insight, but don't go, you know, and just poke holes and poke to try and find some new insight, because obviously you didn't do good enough and do it before. You have to acknowledge when you expand, when you grow. And that's the tragedy of it for so many people who do so much beautiful work, that they grow and then they don't acknowledge it. And so when the crap shows up again, they don't realize, I've grown. They think they are right back there. So some people spiral up, slam into it, and in their own self-image, in their own estimation of themselves, put themselves way back lower on a spiral. They just throw themselves back there because that's where they think they belong. Don't do that to yourself. Emotional release will heal you. Emotional release will continue the rest of your life. If you don't take it so seriously as a judgment of yourself, you can laugh. Oh, there that is again. Well, darn it. That 10-year-old really, really got into hot water, didn't she? Or he. Right? And you can laugh about it. Release it. Pain come through. Release it. If you do that, you stay in flow. Emotional flow. You stay current. You keep acknowledging your greatness, your light is expanding, your light is more, your light is powerful. You will come to a time when it will show up, and you, as we say, you will laugh. It will not be a serious endeavor. It will not be, oh my gosh, what did I fail to do? You won't see it in those terms. When you come to that point, you'll be able to move forward in your emotional body. You'll keep the flow there. You'll be able to stay balanced in your emotional body. Because, of course, if you're way up here at the top of a big spiral, way, way up high, and you hit some stuff and you think that's because you're a pile of crap because you never got it figured out, obviously, and you go rushing back down to where you were, you know, several cycles earlier, well, you're just going to stick yourself there. And you're going to judge yourself, and you're going to assume that your judgment is correct because you pulled yourself back down there. So obviously that's where you belong and that's where you should be. And you're going to get discouraged. It's not going to encourage you to do any more emotional release, is it? It's like it's infinity. Just go up and come down. Oh, go up and come down. But the journey is about going up and spiraling. And spiraling, and every time you hit those little places, let them go. Because if you don't, if you keep pulling yourself back down, you will create on your spiral a little bomb. These are called aging bombs. You don't want one of those. They sound really bad, don't they? They are. They're not nice. Right? So you've got to remember, you're in a process of remembering who you are, owning who you are, and allowing yourself to claim more of yourself. And what emotions come up? Stop judging yourself. Don't judge yourself about it. And, of course, don't get back into the whole thing that you did when you were 10 and blame somebody else. That doesn't help a bit. Because as soon as you start blaming somebody else, you've pulled yourself down somewhere else in the spiral. See, a lot of people want to reverse aging so they never have to grow up, so they never have to be responsible for themselves. The channel, one of her first jobs when she moved to Florida was in a T-shirt factory with a bunch of other ex-hippies. And it was run by an ex-hippie who did disco designs on T-shirts, right? She talked with him about a year or two ago because she happened to realize it was his birthday. She happened to remember his birthday because it coincided with another event in her life. And so she called him up, and he was still going to, you know, those bands of the, you know, of the 70s and 60s, late 60s, 70s. Some of them have gotten back together and they're doing concerts again. They're playing their old favorites. They're playing their hit songs from 1971. Well, he listed off three of them that he went to. And he says, you know, I see that there's a problem here that I never grew up. But, you know, I don't know what to do about it now. You know, his little financial kingdom is crumbling. He's struggling. He's unhappy. And he seeks solace by going to the past. That's not aging reversal. If he's not careful, he's going to get the big C. Cancer comes with trying to go back in time to correct an imbalance of love in the past. Either you feel that somebody should have loved you, your parents should have loved you, somebody should have loved you a certain way, you never got it. You're angry, you're pissed, you're sad, you're resigned, you're in sorrow. Somehow or another, you didn't ever do good enough, you never found the right person, you never, whatever, and you never seemed to get the love that you needed. And once you've progressed all through Syndrome X, or gotten really good into Syndrome X, you can go there. You want a way out of life? That's a good one. For other people, the cancer, the end of everything. Cancer is generally the scariest of all of them. So many people die of cancer. For some people, cancer is a phenomenal wake-up call. It's saying, wake up. Love yourself. Take responsibility for your life and love it. Don't keep looking to the past. Don't keep yearning for what you used to long for. Do you remember when you were a teenager and you experienced longing? Do you remember the energy of longing? Oh, I wish I could find that wonderful love. Oh, I wish I could this. Oh, I wish my life were like that. Oh, the fantasies of adolescence. Some people still want to have that. They feel kind of weirdly alive when they're longing for something. We would sense it would be pretty unsatisfying. But then, you know, if you're numbed out otherwise, that gives you a sense that something's going on. But the thing is that the emotional body has to be cleaned out. Love has to be given and received. If you don't give and receive enough love, your immune system is going to fall apart, which happens also in Syndrome X. Like, duh, surprise. You get autoimmune problems where you turn on yourself. Now, isn't that an example of judging yourself taken to the extreme? You judge yourself so harshly you want to separate from yourself so that when your chemistry is in touch with other aspects of your own chemistry, it will recognize it as something foreign and attack it. your organs can be destroyed. That's one way to get rid of emotional problems. Very, very extreme. But if it's a wake-up call, there are people who have recovered from cancer using alternative means, changing their life, opening themselves up to something fresh and new, often needing to move to a new environment, creating newness, creating future, creating freshness, moving forward into the future, anticipating something positive in the future, looking for love within the self, loving the self, not looking for others to validate and love the self. Cancer can be overcome. Doesn't matter whether you do chemo or whether you do naturopathic detox. You can overcome it. Let's look at diabetes and blood sugar now. It's also a big killer. And it creates tremendous pain. You know, the circulation gets so impaired that you can lose toes and fingers. You eat yourself up. What is sugar? Sugar is sweetness. The sweetness of life. Huh? If you have low blood sugar, you don't have enough of it. You don't allow yourself to have it because you're too angry. You want justice. But you don't want anyone to see your anger. So you cover yourself in the sweet, nice veneer. But underneath it all, a low blood sugar profile is a very angry, angry person. What happens in low blood sugar is that when you eat, the sugar that's in your food, as you process it, raises your sugar. And then the insulin from your pancreas goes and keeps it from going too high, keeps it balanced. In low blood sugar, the pancreas says, no, no, you're not allowed to have sweetness. Life is not sweet. You're not sweet. You're an angry bitch or bastard, you know? So we're not going to let you have this sugar. So insulin puts out lots and slams the sugar levels down. But then the body's out of balance. So the body goes to the adrenal glands, which go to the liver and pull sugar out of the liver, which is stored away for other kinds of body emergencies and circumstances, and to thrust it into the bloodstream. So the adrenals start working. Boom, da 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 da. And adrenals have to do with will. Adrenals have to do with adrenaline, which is high state of alarm. It becomes a survival issue, so the adrenals have to kick in. If you're really angry, you can overload your adrenals too. Adrenals are what push and drive, dominate, and control. Adrenals. Push, push, push. Manic people. Adrenals. There comes a point where the adrenals get exhausted. The liver runs out of sugar supplies. And the pancreas has run out of insulin. And then diabetes. The diabetic is saying, okay, there is one way to have the sweetness of life. And that means I've got to take care of people. I've got to be loved. I've got to be the beloved one. I've got to get people to love me. Now, people have all sorts of methods to try and get other people to love them. And some of them are quite bizarre. If you're really dysfunctional and really know codependency really well, you can get into codependent. You can find a codependent person you can treat like crap, and they will love you in a really weird, dependent, cloying kind of way. Or you can be the savior for everybody. Here, I'll take care of you. Here, I'll take care of you. I'll minister to you. I'll minister you. I am so spiritual. I want to give to you. You are so wonderful. I want to give to you, and I want to love you, and I want to give to you and love to you and love you. I'm just, aren't I just so lovable? Oh, yes, I'm giving and loving to you. Okay, where's mine? Where's mine? That can be in there, too. Another kind of manipulation. Let's guilt trip them into loving me, or let's make them think that I'm just the most lovable person. They just want to love, be loved, and so they'll be around me, and then they will love me. Those are kind of extremes, and there's all sorts of things in between. Have you noticed a kind of common theme here? Love? High blood pressure. This is one of the earlier signs. Blood. Family. Your blood is your family. Energetically, thematically. Somewhere, somebody in your family expected you to perform, to be perfect, to do things the correct and appropriate way, to make them proud. Or to redeem yourself for some horrible something or other that you did, maybe you don't even remember. It comes down through families very often. Coming with that pressure, coming with that demand from family, the expectations that are then, of course, applied and moved and transferred over to others, to other authority figures such as employers, and before that teachers, and but employers. And what happens is that the person being pressured upon, person being demanded upon, is getting more and more afraid they're not going to succeed. More and more afraid there's going to be more problems ahead that they cannot deal with. They cannot perform good enough, and they're scared. And then underneath that, they get really pissed. Well, there's a common theme again, too, isn't it? Anger. So they get really, really angry over the demands. Hostile. Hostile. Really hostile. You know some people who can be really, really nice and really sweet, but as soon as you make a demand of them, they can get hostile? Ever meet any of those people? Have you ever been one of those? Your prime candidate for high blood pressure, if you get in a chronic situation of pressure and demand upon you. On one hand, you're afraid you're not going to do it right, and you're going to make a mistake. You have anxiety. You're going to flub up. It's going to be horrible. You're going to be hated. You're going to be judged. You're going to be despised, shamed, humiliated. It's going to be a horrible, horrible failure. And you're going to have all the love and all the joy removed from you. And on the other hand, you're totally pissed and enraged over all that demand and pressure. That's too much for you to handle. And you push yourself and drive yourself to do better, all the while resenting more and more. Oh, by the time, of course, you get to that, your blood pressure is way up there, and you have to be probably on various medications and stuff like that. They talk about thinning the blood. Right? Part of the medication is to thin the blood. That's why you take aspirin and some certain drugs, thin the blood. Blood thinners. Keep the blood from coagulating. It thins out the heavy-duty emotional crap from your family. Well, they say blood is thicker than water. And high blood pressure can get really thick. It can clump, start clumping. All right, these are the biomarkers that are generally associated with serious aging that leads to death. And in your culture, aging is a line that goes down. Remember that peak? There's a peak. You peak at some point, and then there's this line that goes down to death. These are the biomarkers that lead to death. We're going to go more into the different systems and what they mean tomorrow. But we want to make a very strong point, is that virtually all aging comes from an imbalance. We said balance, remember, and flow. So all of it comes from an imbalance. And the imbalance will include an imbalance of love, an imbalance of emotions that you have too many emotions repressed in balance to the emotions that you actually express. You have to keep that in balance as well. And you're not in flow. If you hold on to emotion or you hold on to something in the issue in the past, you're not in flow. You basically block. When your emotions sludge down and get blocked and get locked, the way they get locked into place is through judgment. So judgment is a key here. Release all judgments. Learn to love yourself. Honor and respect and own who you are. And you have to keep reminding yourself of that. You may have to put it on a note and put it on your refrigerator or something to remind yourself. Because in your consensus, you're always reminded that you're inadequate. Yes? You're not as beautiful as the movie stars. You're not as rich as the wealthy guys. You don't have the power that the politicians have. So you have to remind yourself that you're powerful. You have to remind yourself that you are a light being. And you have to develop love for you. And in this process, on a daily basis, keep releasing emotion. For a while, it may seem that you need to release more emotion than you actually are feeling. And if that's the case, you'll catch up. If you do it proactively, you don't have to hit the bombs. And what is the first marker of aging, which most people think is gray hair, wrinkles? Gray hair and wrinkles, yes. Those are the first thing people really notice. What are wrinkles? Wrinkles are a dehydration of your skin. You require an emulsion of water and oil or fat to keep your skin hydrated, and a certain number of minerals to keep your connective tissue that your skin has in it viable. If you don't express and feel and flow with your emotions, all the liquid balance of your body goes out of whack. You dehydrate. You dehydrate emotionally. You lose your emotional oomph. You lose the emotional intensity. Do you remember when you were young how emotionally intense your life was? Can you vaguely remember? As a child, you could have intense, you know, you could cry 5, 6, 7 times a day, laugh and scream several times a day. up and down and all around. Intense, intense, intense. Go, go, go. Not every child, but, you know, that's a kind of a common aspect of childhood, that intensity. And when you're an adolescent, do you remember how intense that could be? Ooh, man, if you did something embarrassing, it was you wanted to go and just die. Just, it was so intense, it was so extreme. So where is all that now? Now we're not suggesting that you ought to, you know, be in such mortal terror of being embarrassed now. You should be pretty free of it. Loving yourself, accepting yourself, being okay with who you are. It's hard to embarrass you now. But still, where are all those emotions? Where are those feelings, those responses, those stretchings, those reachings, the creative stretching? Where's the emotions now? Hydrate yourself. Feel. So there's wrinkles, gray hair. Gray hair, what's gray hair? You run out of minerals. Certain minerals. We want to point out that the minerals that you run out of are often the same minerals that are used in your sugar processing. And also the same minerals that are used to maintain and sustain your immune system. What's the theme there? Love. Now, that doesn't mean, okay, I'm going to love myself and my hair is going to turn back to its normal color. At this point in your life, you're probably going to have to take some minerals. But if you take the right blend of minerals and you get your digestion to work correctly and you're healing and releasing your emotions and you get into a good balance, there's no reason why you can't have all your natural hair color back again. The channel knows a doctor who is well known for his ranting and raving about minerals. He made a name for himself with a tape called Dead Doctors Don't Lie. A real crazy guy, fun guy. And he was able to grow his hair back a couple of inches. He was bald back to about halfway back. And he was able to grow his hair back in. And it came back in its youthful color, just with minerals. Now, if he could have just straightened out his emotional body, who knows how much better it could have been. All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a break. And during this break, think about your emotional body. Think about your emotions. Think about what aging symptoms do you feel that you are leaning towards having of the common ones. What is your themes? What emotions do you have in there? And from a spiritual perspective, emotionally, think about this too. Why are you still alive today? What are you living for? What are you anticipating? What's ahead? Why are you still alive? Why are you still living? What are you living for? Who are you living for? Who do you love? Do you get enough love? Do you allow yourself to be loved? Do you allow yourself to be seen? Just think about these things. We'll take a break and we'll return to do some questions and answers so that we can address some of your concerns around this. All right. Farewell.